Live from Cap Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Mike Haggerty for Vicky. 96 dead, countless still missing. That is the update this morning from Maui, where the destruction is unfathomable. It is not, as I said before the news, the largest or deadliest wildfire in U.S. history. The Camp Fire was the deadliest in California history. This has surpassed that. The deadliest wildfire in U.S. history, the Peshtigo Fire in Wisconsin, killed 1,152. That was in 1871. The governor of Hawaii reporting that the search for the unaccounted for is just getting underway and that the death toll is no doubt going to climb even higher. All this as new details are emerging about the ferocity of last week's fires on Maui. Governor Josh Green announced on Sunday that only 3% of the devastated area has been searched. He also said that the fire spread so rapidly, at a rate of a mile a minute, that it was practically impossible for people to get out of harm's way. And the governor reported that the damage is estimated, for now, to be in the $6 billion range, and that as well is expected to climb. Jonathan Shiroma Masaki knows Maui well. It's where he's from. After growing up on Maui, he served a career in the military and then worked and lived here in Sacramento for years as a television reporter. He's recently moved home to Hawaii, where he is a traffic reporter for Hawaii News Now. Welcome to Insight, Jonathan.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It's good to be here.
So I understand that you are personally worried for some family members because of the Maui fires.
Well, and sadly, you know, my cousin lost his in-laws and his sister-in-law and her son. That was discovered just late last week, and we do have one second cousin that is still missing and not accounted for. So yes, there is a lot of concern in my family this morning.
We are so sorry for your loss and for your concern. We hope that the missing family member is found safe. I know it's difficult and emotional, but would you walk us through some of what you're feeling right now?
You know, as you kind of just gave the latest, it just affects me all over again. To hear the magnitude of the financial losses, but more so the loss of human life. I don't know how you can really come to terms with just all of that. You know, having covered it as a California National Guard soldier, you know, and the fires that happened here, certainly that touched my heart and broke my heart. But to go to Hawaii, back to Maui, and the very place where you know, we as children just played in the backyard under the mango tree and running around the sugar mill, it has a different emotion to it, because that's all gone. And it's so difficult to sometimes come to terms with just the reality of it all. So it's a mixed emotion, to be quite honest with you, man. I still am trying to process a lot of what's happening.
And you've seen a lot in your career. In the military, you served in Iraq. As a journalist, you covered your fair share of natural disasters. But to see one hit your hometown, that must feel very different.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I think that's, you hit the nail on the head right there, because you would never expect this in your own hometown and your where my grandmother's roots are, right in that specific area. And, you know, remembering the family gatherings as a child and the innocence lost now, that those memories are the ones that we're going to have to hold on to, because, quite frankly, it's going to be a very difficult road ahead. And I know everybody knows that. And as more details become available, it's very clear that there's a lot that needs to be done yet. And it's heartbreaking.
We're hearing just how ferocious those winds were last week. Can you share with us some of the topography, the geography of Maui that might have in fact contributed to the fires?
Well, you know, the area that my family members lived in were on, you know, kind of the hillside. There's a high school there called Lahaina Luna, which is at the top of the mountain. And as that winds blew down, you know, it is very close to the shoreline. So it's not a very steep descent, but it is a gradual descent nonetheless. And it goes, you know, from the mountain side and then all the way to the sea level. So it's a gradual decline there, very heavily populated with old residents. And I don't mean old in the sense of, I mean more like longtime residents and family members who grew up there, and the generations continue to, you know, we're continuing to live in that area. So it's a very, it's kind of scattered with residential and some commercial and hotel type of settings in that old Lahaina town.
You know, many people know Maui as a vacation destination, but the perspective's very different from that of a person who lives there. Tell Yes. us about your native Maui. What do you love most about it?
You know, and I think it's still going to ring true to today. You go back to Maui, the Maui that I grew up in was a huge sense of ohana. And ohana in the native language, we say olelo Hawaii, which means the language of Hawaii, really means family. And I strongly believe that that spirit of ohana will continue to thrive where everybody concerned with each other and try to help each other out. That's what I remember about Maui. It was, you know, this was in the, I hate to date myself so much, but, you know, to the late 60s, early 70s, when I was a child, Maui was different then, obviously. The old Lahaina town was the way it is kind of now, but not as many resorts there. So, you know, running around barefoot with a puka, which is whole, in your shorts and your t-shirts, and just really not caring about what you look like, but, you know, running from the family home under the mango tree to the beach and just diving in and coming back and just, you know, your grandparents and aunties and uncles telling you, hey, go dry off before you get into the house. That's the real, the innocent memories I have of that area. You know, on Front Street, there was this old noodle shop that served the noodles in this like cone, like you have, you know, snow cones in, mm-hmm. but they would shove all the noodles in there. Yeah. That's what I'm going to remember.
Mm-hmm. Over the weekend, you posted a video of a song that you played on the piano called the Maui Waltz. Let's yes. hear a little bit of that. Mm-hmm. Jonathan, explain just what the Maui Waltz means to you right now.
You know, Mike, the Maui Waltz is actually a love song, and it speaks about, you know, someone who loses a love in life and did not realize that this sudden loss would happen. And when I was kind of trying to come to terms with all of this and thinking about that song from my childhood, I thought about what we're experiencing right now, that the lyrics go, no one told me that when the dance was through, I'd be losing you. And that's what happened here, is the loss that we feel is humongous, is huge. But the lyrics also go on to say, I hear the Maui Waltz, but it doesn't hurt somehow. The memories that I have will be with me. So play on Maui Waltz.
It's beautiful.
And that's the tune, that's the memory, that's the lyrics that I think all of us on Maui will hold on to, the memories, the good memories of what that island represents is going to help us rebuild and help the people of Maui get back to where we need to be. And I'm sorry, just losing it a little bit here, but
understandable.
That's the essence of what I believe the song will now represent in our lives today.
Jonathan, there are challenges ahead for Maui. What's the one thing you believe is needed most?
You know, in the Hawaiian language, the word malama means to take care. And I believe anybody who truly is from the islands knows that word malama. And I know that as I look, you know, onto some of the coverage, you know, unfortunately I'm in California as we speak because of some engagements that I had committed to. But when I touch base to my family and hearing what they're doing, and I plan to get back to Maui next week at some point, that spirit of malama, to care, will be what will carry the people of Maui through this. It's going to be challenging. We know that. But I think if all of us come to terms with what, you know, Californians have gone through, the loss of the city of paradise and others that have lost their entire towns and loved ones and whatnot, I really believe that what we saw here in California is going to ring true in Hawaii. And that is that spirit of taking care of each other. And the one thing that and everybody needs to realize is the patience that we need. I know people get frustrated and you want things to happen quickly, but I believe that unity, that Malama will come back and help us make it through this.
And finally, what's the best way, in your view, that people here on the mainland and around the world can help support Maui right now?
You know, thank you for asking about that. I think the key thing is find a reputable nonprofit organization that is reputable, okay? Because, you know, there's going to be some shams that'll come out. And, you know, if you go to, I believe, every news organization has a website that specifies, if you'd like to help the people of Hawaii, here are some resources that you can go through. You know, I know Maui has a few things out. Our website on Hawaii News Now has a website, and I strongly believe that CAP Radio has something like that too. So all I would say is just be very alert, be mindful of who you are getting in contact with, about to reach out. But again, I believe that's the best way to help out the people of Hawaii.
Jonathan Masaki Shiroma is a Maui native, a former Sacramento TV reporter. Jonathan, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us this morning.
Mahalo, Mike, and I just want to say to you also, and to everybody at your staff, ahui ho in malama pono. Until we meet again, please take care.
We're all wishing you all the best. Up next, California is sending people and equipment to Hawaii to help with the situation that we here are all too familiar with. The Department of Emergency Services joins us on Insight next. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, CAP Radio. I'm Mike Haggerty for Vicki Gonzalez.
Hi there. If you're enjoying Insight, we think you'll love our podcast, Blue Dot, with your host, that's me, Dave Shlohm. Every week, we take a deep dive into science and nature, from the search for life beyond our pale blue dot in the vastness of space to the ecosystems we all depend on. You never know what you'll hear, from the physics of Leonardo da Vinci to communications with humpback whales. Check out Blue Dot wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, it's Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air. We bring you in-depth, long-form interviews with actors, directors, musicians, authors, journalists, and more. Listen to our Peabody Award-winning Fresh Air podcast from WHYY and NPR.
You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm Mike Haggerty, filling in this week for Vicki Gonzalez. We here in California know a thing or two about responding to disasters. It's unfortunate, but we have had our fair share, maybe more, over the years. And now California is stepping up to help out our brothers and sisters in Maui. As we mentioned at the top of this program, the official death toll in Hawaii is now 96, and that surpasses the campfire of 2018 here in California. The death toll across the ocean will climb even higher, says Hawaii's governor, as the recovery effort is just starting to get underway. Brian Ferguson, who handles crisis communications with the Department of Emergency Services, is here with me in studio to talk about the California response to help Hawaii. Brian, thanks for coming in.
Happy to be here. Good morning.
Good morning. So, what is the most immediate need in Hawaii right now in terms of help from California and other states?
Yeah, as you mentioned in your open, this is something that unfortunately we've gotten very good at in California in recent years. And so to be able to extend that support is something we absolutely want to do to our neighbors in Hawaii. And, you know, really what we are right now is a recovery mission, a mission to help this community get back on its feet quickly. And, you know, we have a lot of practice at the steps that goes into it. And so we actually have fire and rescue personnel on the ground, experts in mass casualty incidents, highly specialized search and rescue folks who are working really closely with the officials in Hawaii to help walk them through the process of what it processing a scene, identifying the bodies, and hopefully bringing some closure to the family so they can have a better idea of what happened to their loved ones and help the community move on as quickly as possible.
Other than those things you mentioned, are there other things that Governor Newsom has ordered be sent to Maui?
You know, we've been in a conversation with them since the very beginning. Governor Newsom talked to Governor Green in Hawaii the night of of. And it's probably one of those conversations that we're going to continue to work with them. Over the weekend, we sent debris management specialists of what does it take to move all of this ash, this environmentally sensitive materials out so you can rebuild. And so we sent another team of four folks this weekend, and we continue to talk to them. There's a possibility that we could send additional CAL FIRE personnel to help manage an incident. These are very complex, large incidents that, you know, isn't just the immediate fire, that they're going to have to manage this incident for months to come. And, you know, we have a lot of personnel. We're blessed with some of the most highly trained folks in the world here in California, and a lot of them. And our fire season has not really started yet, so we do have good capacity to help. And, you know, we're going to continue to talk to them of what is the process, what are the gaps, and how can we help fill that for the people who need it.
Talk to us about some of the work that the urban search and rescue teams do and the specialized training that they have.
Yeah, so these are folks that get deployed all over the world. You often see them in building collapses or hurricanes where we're going through and in a complex scene where there's, you know, everything's melted in some ways. And so they're going through with tools, with cadaver dogs, with, you know, really highly trained scientists and actually working through a scene to understand here's where people might have sheltered. Maybe we can find people over here. At the very beginning, they're actually looking for survivors. And so these are folks who work through a crisis scene, provide expertise, and ultimately move that scene so we can identify the remains and get people out as quickly as possible, and, you know, help, you know, the things you're seeing, these daily updates on number of people missing, number of people reconnected with their families. Those are the kind of things we help do with the community so they can move on.
There are the occasional miracle stories, but by and large, there is a limit to human survival. There is a point on the calendar past which it really transforms from a rescue mission to a recovery mission, isn't it?
That's absolutely correctly. And tragically, that's probably where we are for the vast majority of folks. You know, there is a lot of confusion that happens in an incident like this. And so I think saw a number of over 1,000 people missing. You know, the chances are most of those folks are actually just haven't reconnected with their loved ones. But people who are in the immediate vicinity who weren't able to get out, you know, at this point it is trying to identify folks using, you know, complex DNA matching, using dental records, and trying to use that specialized training that we have here to lend that support to the people of Hawaii.
What's life like for people who work in that role, rescue and recovery, when they get on a plane to go help? Do they have any idea when they'll be coming home?
You know, these are people who live for these moments, and why it's a tragedy. You know, we are at our best when some other people are at their worst, and we want to bring that support to them. And it's really the most direct form of public service you can provide of people who run towards the fire, who hop on a plane in a time of crisis, and, you know, do try to support them, mental health counseling, all the types of support we can provide. But these are folks who live for this, who they're driven by, and that we in California have invested to get them ready to do this exact thing, which is support communities during times of crisis and really move people to be safer and, you know, help bring an incident in a way that's going to support this community and the broader recovery effort, because it's not just today, but it's going to be for months to come.
It's what you've given me here is valuable insight, but it didn't answer the question, which is when they get on that plane to go to Hawaii, do they have any idea when they'll be home?
No, they'll stay for as long as they need to. And so they'll be part of the incident management team that's run by the local Hawaii officials. If they can process a scene quickly, they'll do that as quickly as possible. And sometimes you get there and you find complexities that you may not know about. And so I think the short answer is they'll stay for as long as they're needed. And then we'll, you know, continue to work through additional personnel to fill that need.
And these people, we should emphasize, are not checking into a luxury resort. They're going into a disaster zone. They're living in the same conditions as the people they're trying to help while they're there.
Absolutely. They'll be part of the community. In most cases, they'll be in a fire camp, sleeping on cots just like everyone else. And this isn't something we do for comfort. This is something that we do because it helps the community. And people who do this are strongly driven to provide that support and aid in a time of crisis. And we're happy as Californians to be able to provide that support, because we so often in the past have received aid from all across this country when we've had tragedies and crises. And, you know, it's part of our duty. It's part of the one of the things the governor emphasizes is bringing that same support to others in their time of need.
Brian, you mentioned something a second ago that I want to come back and spend a little more time on, and that is that the people who rush to help, the folks that we're sending over there, whether it's here in California or across the ocean in Maui, those people see things that most of us, please God, never will. What kind of help do we have for them once they come home?
You know, this is one of the biggest growth areas we've seen in disaster management and crises in the last couple of years, both on firefighters, law enforcement personnel, because as these disasters become more frequent and more severe, the type of work is longer in duration and more challenging. And so there's been really significant investments in mental health counseling. Peer support is something that we're very big on. And that's actually one of the things we're going to be lending the people of Hawaii as well is, you know, you're not in it alone. What can we learn and bring to you, which is that you don't have to do this by yourself, that there's others, not just California, but all across this country that can support them, because that helps build a sense of community and helps them get through it, because everyone says they're good in the moment when we call them, because oftentimes we talk to other states, but a week, 2 weeks in, a month, and this could be 6 or 8 months before this incident's really settled down. And so it's here for them, not just now, but for the long term.
The very real fact is that these people take on trauma in order to ease the trauma of others.
That's absolutely right. I mean, we're nearly 5 years on from the campfire, and a lot of that work is still ongoing today. And so we're all too familiar with the challenges. And, you know, anything we've learned from what we do here in California can bring support to them to help them rebuild the community, it won't be the same. We want to, you know, emphasize that, you know, we can move things quickly, but the community is not going to be the same as it was before. But perhaps what positives can we build out of this to help people get back on their feet or rebuild their lives?
We here in California know this kind of disaster all too well. How much coordination goes on between federal, local, and state agencies? How much of it's going on right now? And who takes the lead in a scenario like this?
That's a really good question. And so all disasters are local, right? So they all start at the those closest to an incident. And so in this case, it's the sheriff of the county of Maui, the local responders there. They have an emergency management office like we do here in California. But of an incident this size and scale, the Federal Emergency Management Agency will have a very significant footprint in helping them, particularly for a state like Hawaii, which is smaller in population than some cities here in California. And so I think, you know, that's one thing for folks who may be listening here in the Sacramento region not to take for granted of. There are probably as many first responders in Sacramento County as there are in the entire state of Hawaii. And so just the scope of what they're dealing with is very different than what we're used to. We have, you know, probably 15 to 70% of the first responders in the entire country here in our state. And so we're able to quickly move resources, where a place like Hawaii, it's smaller. Just because the nature of it is more isolated. And so it's different. You know, you can't have fire trucks drive from one county to another to assist a fire like this. It's a more complex undertaking because you need planes or barges to move a lot of this equipment.
In the few seconds that we have left, let's switch gears. We have not had any huge wildfires so far this summer in California. As we know, that can change in a heartbeat. Heat is coming this week. What are you guys at the OES keeping your eyes on?
We're keeping our eyes closely on heat and the electricity grid, and we'd remind your listeners to keep an eye on, you know, loved ones, elderly, kids, pets who may be at risk with the heat, and wildfires still to come. This is an important reminder for people to sign up for alerts today, with a lot of conversation about alerts of what's happened in Hawaii, but getting on the list will help you with heat, will help you with wildfires, and you can sign up with your county. So that's a takeaway everyone can do right today.
Brian Ferguson is Crisis Communications Specialist for the California Department of Emergency Services. Brian, thanks for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
And that's Insight for today. You can learn more about our guests at capradio.org/insight. You can also subscribe to the Insight podcast at Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. If you'd like to join the conversation, email us at insight@capradio.org. Thank you to managing editor R.M. Sarkissian. Our digital producers are Megan Minotta, Claire Morgan, and Chris Hagan. Insight's technical director is Mark Jones. Our engineer is Antonio Muniz. Show music by Adrian Gilmore. I'm Mike Haggerty. For Vicky. We'll be back tomorrow.
Hi, it's Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air. We bring you in-depth, long-form interviews with actors, directors, musicians, authors, journalists, and more. Listen to our Peabody Award-winning Fresh Air podcast from WHYY and NPR.